Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be talking with Assistant Summit County Manager Jana Young and Sustainability Coordinator Lisa Yoder talking about the agenda for tomorrow's County Council meeting. Paralympian Chris Waddell stopping by. He's being inducted into the Paralympic and Olympic Ski Hall of Fame. Park City Planning Director Bruce Erickson previewing tomorrow's Planning Commission agenda. And finally, I'll be talking with the Superintendent of Schools, Jill Gilday, along with Park City School Board member Andrew Kaplan, talking about the anonymous complaints received regarding the anti-bullying program. Good morning. Well, the Summit County Council meets tomorrow in Colville, starting in work session at 11:30 to interview applicants for vacancies on the Summit County Restaurant Tax Advisory Committee. Later, the County Council will review a renewable energy service contract with Rocky Mountain Power. On the phone to discuss that and other agenda items, I have Assistant County Manager Jana Young in the studio with me, the County's Sustainability Manager Lisa Yoder. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
Hey, Jana, the Council will be appointing and then reappointing some members to the Restaurant Tax Advisory Committee. So do we have enough applicants to fill the open positions?
You know, I haven't actually looked at who they're interviewing, but I think there is quite a slate. There's always a lot of interest in these particular boards and commissions compared to some of the others we have. So, yeah, I think they'll have quite a good number to choose from.
All right. Then at 2 o'clock, there'll be a presentation from the Summit County Clubhouse. This is the gathering center run by the participants located at the Christian Center. What is it they're asking the council for?
So this is mainly an update to share this project with the council. Your listeners may know that the council has 5 strategic priorities, and one of those is mental wellness and substance abuse issues. And in 2017, the council adopted a mental wellness strategic plan, which identified gaps in services and laid out opportunities in things like education, prevention, and treatment for individuals and families struggling with mental illness. And so the Summit County Clubhouse was one of the programs identified in that strategic plan to provide adults with mental illness with social and pre-employment support. So tomorrow, Amber McKay, the executive director of that clubhouse, is merely going to share with the council the status of that program, as well as provide them with suggestions on how they can continue to support it.
So they're not asking for financial support or a grant?
Oh, well, they have applied for a nonprofit grant as part of our 2020 budget process. And in the manager's proposal to the council, I think 2 weeks ago, he did recommend funding that.
All right. The council, can you tell us how much that is?
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I didn't see that application.
Okay. The council will also get an update on the bike share status. Reportedly, Wiggins CEO and 2 other company staff members will be present at the meeting tomorrow to discuss the problems that we saw and hopefully prevent them in the future. We got a real slow start to the e-bike season this year due to breakdowns and apparently no repairs being made over the winter. Also, some personnel problems keeping things staffed. Have all of these problems been resolved at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think just to give some context to this, you know, there was a combination of market and local conditions, as well as some federal grant requirements that really created some challenges this season. As you know, Summit County is an expensive place to live and to work, and so the vendor really struggled with trying to find enough mechanics to service and fix these bikes. And not to mention, they're pretty specialized equipment. So the challenge is, you know, for the most part, the bikes were working well, but things do break. And so, you know, that was the big effort or the big challenge this season. Additionally, there was some cellular phone coverage in the area that impacted the customer experience and things like that. We have heard from Bewegan. As you mentioned, they are in town this week. They got a new CEO and a new project manager, that some of the things that they are doing to address this to make sure it doesn't happen next season is they have hired finally more mechanics and really focused on people that are already in Summit County, since it was hard to recruit folks. In order to do that, they did have to increase wages by about $5 an hour to make that feasible for people. So with more mechanics here on the ground, we do expect to see those bikes getting fixed faster. We also now have a local project manager to oversee the program. Prior to now, that person was located in Denver. So again, we expect to see improvements based on that. I do think it's important to note, though, that interestingly, this season, we had our staff received fewer complaints about the bikes and the season and the experience and the program than we have received in prior years, which makes us think that those using the bikes were still having a good experience.
Yeah. So who's responsible, financially responsible, for all of the repairs that need to be done to the bike? Is that something that Summit County has to pick up the tab for?
No, that is Bewegan's responsibility. The county actually secured a federal grant early on when we first launched the program, and that went to actually installing the stations and buying, purchasing the bikes. But really, the operational responsibilities are now Bewegan's, fall under Bewegan, and so they really are the ones that need to be addressing those issues.
All right, so they would be responsible also then for paying those increased wages?
Correct.
Yeah, so how are they making money?
So they have sponsorship. That's their model. Folks may know or remember that both IHC and the Park City Chamber Bureau have sponsored the program, and they also get lower level. Those are the primary sponsors, but they also work to get lower level sponsors for ads on the stations and things like that. That's really how they fund the program.
All right. Also, just wanted to mention at 4:15, there'll be a budget presentation. And it looks like there is some kind of proposal for a new county department.
Yeah, this is a great opportunity to share with everyone both about our a reorganization of one of our departments and the county's annual budget process. So I am excited to share that we have newly named the Department of Heritage and Arts, under which the Summit County Library System falls, along with our history and public art programs. Some of your listeners will remember that our long-term historian, Nazee Vernon, retired this year, along with Travis English, who was handling the public art program, left the county to pursue an opportunity in Salt Lake. So, you know, it was impossible for us to replace the skills, knowledge, and experience of both of these employees, so we didn't even try. Instead, we chose to see it as an opportunity to restructure these functions and better incorporate them into the county. And in doing that, we found a really beautiful nexus between those functions and the library, which, you know, we really do view the library as a community gathering place and center for arts, culture, and learning. So having all of those three front functions under one umbrella presents a tremendous opportunity to promote and enhance each of those functions as they all support each other. And so Dan Compton, our library director, will now oversee those functions. And he has appointed Joe Frazier, who is a native of Camas and historian by academic background, to be our museum director and to run the history program. And so Dan will be discussing those changes with the council as he presents his 2020 budget request, which also then officially kicks off the departmental presentations that are part of our annual budgeting process.
So what is the budget request?
It's generally what was funded before. There's not really any increases being requested for the program. Dan is doing some innovative things in the library this year. He's applying for a grant to run an Open Plus type of program, which allows us to expand our hours at the Colville branch by giving patrons access before and after hours. Basically, they sign a form and they get a code and they get to go in the library and use it until it opens up. But in terms of the other two functions, they're going to be funded at what they were this year. And I don't know those specific numbers.
So I know that the museum there inside the Colville Courthouse was closed a bit ago for cleaning. Has it been reopened?
Oh, yes. That was just a temporary, I think it was just a couple hours one day, as we were trying to clean up some things in there. So, it's back online, and we encourage people to come check it out.
Okay. I know we've pulled you out of a conference that you're attending. I'm going to be talking with Lisa Yoder about the program. You can certainly stay put, or we can call it quits at this point. So I appreciate your time.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay. And let's see, Lisa, discussion, that's happening at about 3:15, review and discussion regarding a renewable energy service contract with Rocky Mountain Power to procure net 100% renewable energy for government operations. So what is it that we're trying to do here?
We're trying to achieve Council's goal. Their vision is to reduce emissions 80% by 2040, the emissions from county operations. And in order to do that, one of the biggest, most direct impacts we can address is changing from electricity powered by fossil fuels to electricity powered by renewables.
So what does this contract do?
So the agreement, it's like a master agreement. And the participants in this agreement, well, our agreement is specific to Summit County, but similarly, Salt Lake City, Park City, Deer Valley, Vail, and Utah Valley University all contributed together in an effort to secure 80 megawatts of power. So by partnering together, we procure the economy of scale of one large solar facility that will be sited out near near Tooele.
Okay, so have you come up with an energy provider and a plan, a program?
Yes, this went out for a request for proposals. Rocky Mountain Power issued the request for proposal that we helped write, all of these partners, and over 100 projects submitted proposals. Some were wind, some were solar, and all were sited in Utah. That was our goal, to have the economic development and the jobs specific for Utah. So the best price option was found, and then the agreement states the formulas and all the terms of engagement. Simultaneously, a power purchase agreement is being negotiated between that developer and Rocky Mountain Power, which indicates the price of the electricity that these six partners will pay for this electricity generated by the solar farm.
So that's what we're going to do. We're going to build a solar farm as opposed to a wind farm?
Yes, that's the most economical in this set of proposals.
Okay, so what is the price then of that?
We're not disclosing the price right now under a non-disclosure agreement between the developer, Rocky Mountain Power, and the partners. But we can say that using the avoided costs and the formulas in the contract, in this agreement, it will be minimal price. We're looking at roughly $25,000 per year for Summit County and its dependent districts. So that includes like Basin Special Recreation District, Mountain Regional Water District. Let's see, not Snyderville Basin, the Fire District, our dependent districts. So when you separate that out and apply it to each of the entities under Summit County's contract, the price per to the county itself for the bills we pay looks like it will be in the neighborhood of $3,000 to $7,000 per year additional.
So, but taxpayers are paying for this, right?
Yes.
So they have a right to know how much it's costing them.
They will know when the power purchase agreement is negotiated. And if that does not come in the way as proposed, because we do know those prices, if that does not come in as proposed, we won't sign it.
Okay. So that $25,000 a year, that's just Summit County's portion of it. And then Park City, an additional, would have to pay more. Salt Lake would have to pay. Deer Valley and Vail also have to pay about $25,000 a year as well?
No, it's all proportionate to their demand, to the amount they're purchasing. So we're each purchasing the amount we need. And this is a 15-year contract. So what it does is it locks in that price for 15 years. It fixes that renewable electricity charge. And it's less than 2%. It's about a 1.3% increase to our current electricity bills to be net 100% renewable. Now, if we wanted to build that amount of solar to supply Summit County, we would be talking in the millions of dollars. So we're looking at about a 1.3% increase above our typical electricity bills to be 100% net renewable.
Okay. So what's the time schedule on this?
The Public Service Commission has to approve the agreement by the end of the year, and then construction would start the beginning of next year, and we would be procuring power in 2023, roughly 10 years ahead of our stated goal.
Okay. And so you're saying that that's for Summit County, it's or the entire solar farm is an 80-megawatt farm?
Correct.
All right. How much of that is Summit County's?
About 6 megawatts.
Okay. And then what about the rest of the agencies?
Don't quote me. I believe Salt Lake City is around 40% of that, and then it goes down from there.
Okay. So Summit County is the second largest?
No, I believe Utah Valley. Let's see. Salt Lake City, I think Utah Valley University,
mm-hmm.
then Vail, Deer Valley, somewhere in there, Summit County and Park City.
Okay.
In that order, declining.
All right. Concerning the recent COG meeting, any east side cities interested in participating?
Well, not in this. This is just for government operations, and this is way too far down the road with these partners who will procure that 80 megawatts. So there's not really room for another partner. We've already basically secured this project to meet our needs.
Okay. So the council is scheduled then to approve this or not?
Well, the council technically doesn't have to approve the agreement. It's a manager's responsibility for procurement of utilities and within the threshold of his authorization. However, we do want the county's agreement, the county council's agreement that this is a good path to pursue their goals, to achieve their goal.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
I think that's it. Thank you.
All right. Jana Young and Lisa Yoder, thanks for your time this morning. Well, Park City resident Chris Waddell, one of a dozen individuals, as well as the 1998 U.S. Olympic women's ice hockey team that won the first ever Olympic gold medal in women's ice hockey, have been inducted into the 2019 U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Hall of Fame, the induction ceremony happening November 1st. Chris Waddell joining me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
And congratulations
Thank you for being
included in this class. When we talked couple of months ago, I think you told me that this was going to be based on a public vote.
It was a public vote. So yes, we were in here just lobbying for votes, I think, when that was the end of August. And apparently the voting worked. Apparently you reached enough people that it all worked out. And so it was actually 10% of the popular vote. And then I think 30% were people who were involved within the organization, whether journalists and people who worked at the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee, which they've renamed it now this year. And then it was 60% of your peers. So I had no idea how it might happen at all. So I was pretty excited that I got in, and I'm looking forward to the induction, and it's one of those weird kind of things. It'll be kind of fun.
Yeah. So you actually had to be nominated before it was kind of put to a public vote, right?
Yes, I did have to be nominated. And I don't know how that part worked.
Yeah. So any idea how many votes you did get?
No idea.
Yeah.
No idea at all. Enough.
So what happens from here?
So the induction ceremony is on the 1st. We'll go to Colorado Springs. I have my father's flying in. My brother's flying in. I have a couple of cousins. My wife is flying in from the UK, from London to go to it. So we're going to have a big group of people. It'll be a great celebration. And it's fun, just to see some of the other people. I mean, you mentioned the women's hockey team. One of the two guys that I'm interested in meeting are Tommy Smith and John Carlos, who are the guys from 1968 who were in the 200 meters, who were first and third in the 200 meters. I think it might have even been 200 yards back then. And they did the sort of the Black Panther salute just in support of civil rights. At that point, and it really kind of been excommunicated from the whole movement as a result of that, but sort of using their platform to hopefully affect a bigger good. And so I'm excited to meet those guys and just, just sort of be in the middle of the whole thing.
Yeah. So this is taking place at Colorado Springs where
it's at the training center. So it'll be at the training center. And yeah, I'm interested to see what they do, what kind of a party they throw for us.
Yeah, yeah. So how is this different than like the U.S. Ski Hall of Fame in Michigan? This is, you have to have been a Paralympian or Olympian to be part of this?
Yes, you have to be a Paralympian or Olympian to be part of it. And, Yeah, and it's all the sports is the difference. The with the Ski Hall of Fame in Ishpeming, it's skiing. It's skiing specific. Where this is, you know, track and field and swimming and skiing and diving and, you know, equestrian and shooting and, you know, everything. So, and it's really, as a kid, I think it was the Olympics were such a huge part of my life. And we'd all be around the television, which I think was a lot smaller now than the televisions are, or smaller then than they are now. But it was just a huge part of our lives. And so in some ways, it's almost like being transported into the company of those heroes, people who were my heroes when I was growing up.
Very cool. So what, is there like a plaque or something that is put onto the wall? Is that how it works? Or?
Yeah, so what they're doing, it had taken actually a hiatus. They had not inducted anybody from 2012 until 2019. And part of it was not necessarily having a place, but they're building an Olympic and Paralympic museum in Colorado Springs. So with that effort, which is going really well, this is a logical thing. And I assume that there will be a plaque. I don't know for sure.
Okay. Take pictures. Let us know. So it's been 10 years. You're celebrating the 10-year anniversary of hand cycling your way up to the top of Mount Kilimanjaro. Any plans to celebrate that at all?
Yes, to celebrate that, a couple of things. I am returning to Tanzania this year for the first time. And so 10-year anniversary, we will do a film screening of One Revolution, of the film of the climb. We had a guy named Tajiri who was a porter who had lost his leg in a rock slide on the mountain. He had joined us and climbed with us. And so we're going to do a film screening, and I really hope that, you know, we help him become a star in Tanzania. I'll do a few of our name tags presentations, our educational program with One Revolution over there as well, which is just fun. And, you know, it's one of those, the first time I went over, we went out, and it's a 36-hour flight to get there. And so I was kind of going for like a jog in my everyday chair just to kind of work out the kinks of having been on a plane for so long. And people were staring at me like I was on television, not like I was a television star, but like that there was a separation, like I was on television. And I said to somebody, you know, I can't believe that people are staring this much. And the woman who was our liaison said, well, one, you're white, so you're different. And two, you're in a wheelchair. And then three, nobody's pushing you. And so the name tags that we're so used to, the labels that we put on ourselves and others in this country, can be so profoundly different over there. So I'm excited to give that presentation over there and enjoy time and spend some time in Tanzania again.
Okay. Well, again, congratulations. Chris Waddell, the most decorated male mono skier in U.S. history, 3-time Alpine world champion and 32-time national champion. Impressive. Thanks.
Thank you, Leslie.
Well, the Park City Planning Commission meets Wednesday for its regular meeting, joining us with a preview and to discuss other planning-related topics. They have Park City Planning Director Bruce Erickson. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So a short agenda. The first item, a continuation of the King's Crown condo plat. King's Crown items have come up a lot recently at the Planning Commission and City Council meeting. So what's going on with the project?
Well, it's a very complicated project in trying to deliver the affordable housing units, trying to deliver the condominiums, trying to deliver the townhouse units, and trying to deliver the subdivisions. All those require different types of plats. In addition, there's some business decisions that need to be made on how these things are phased. So it's just complicated. It's not difficult. Laura Kermeyer is doing everything she can do to get this delivered for the applicant. We don't have any issues. It's just process.
Okay. And I also know that there's a handful of the so-called attainable units still for sale. I mean, looking back, should we have just gone for affordable as opposed to attainable, since they're not kind of...
Yeah, that's kind of a business decision on the part of the developer and not on the part of the city, where those market rate units or the attainable units sit. So it's kind of not in our list of things to worry about.
Okay. You had mentioned to me that the Woodside Park Phase 2 development has been appealed for a second time?
That's correct. It went back to the Planning Commission on remand to review the setbacks. The Planning Commission requested additional setbacks on Lowell Avenue and then ultimately approved the setback portion of the MPD. That's been appealed again, And so we're having a conversation about when that's going to come back for the second appeal.
Okay, so the grounds are basically the same as they were the first time around?
As far as I know, yes.
Okay, but what we're looking at through a different lens, really, we're looking through the master plan development filter as opposed to just this development filter?
Generally, yes, this is a master plan development. The Planning Commission is allowed to vary setbacks to the zone requirements, which they did do. But there are still some concerns about how the buildings are located. Market rate units are located on Lowell Avenue. The applicant has every right to do this appeal, and we're going to see where it shakes out.
All right. So it goes before the City Council, correct?
At this point, it does. There'll be a conversation amongst all the parties about which group is most appropriate to hear the appeal.
All right. And as we've reported, your boss, Community Development Director Ann Laurent, leaving at the beginning of November to take a new job. Where does that leave the planning department and the projects that we've got underway?
Well, I'd like to tell you that planning now has a free rein and we can do whatever we want. We will miss Ann. The only reason the planning department looks the way it does right now is because the community development director gave me the insight to just hire smart people. So Dave Thacker, the chief building official, and I are going to share some of the administrative duties, the sort of community development duties with respect to arts and culture. Some of the other redevelopment authority things are going to flow to Matt Dias, the city manager.
So we have had a community development director, and then we didn't have one, and then we had one again. Do we need another one? I mean, it's a $200,000 a year job.
Well, we're having that conversation. There are things that the community development director can do that folks like me and Dave in the regulatory side of the house really can't do or get out in front of initiatives that the city council wants, right? So if you put a person like me in front of arts and culture, we're probably going to say this is a really bad idea. And so you need somebody with a little different perspective than me to do that kind of work. And that's what the community development director is really responsible to do. In addition, Anne gave both Dave and I some really solid guidance with respect to our hiring policies and who should be on the team and how we build this team and what we need to be doing to deliver excellent customer service. So if you talk to Anne at any one point in time, her first three sentences are customer service, customer service, customer service. And so Dave and I are going to have to learn that.
Let's see. You also have lost a couple of senior planners this year, Kirsten Whetstone, Francisco Astorga. I mean, what can planning and I guess larger community development department do to retain our senior level employees?
Probably nothing. This is a profession that has a lifespan to it and a profession that, you know, kind of carries the baggage. Every year you're in a position, you're carrying all the legacy of the decisions you've made previously. And so you've got two objectives. You've got professional development that you need to worry about on a daily basis, and you need career development. So if you feel like you want to be a planning director like where Francisco took off to Bountiful, that's a step upward for him. He now runs a community of 50,000 people. Kirsten went to Summit County, and she's responsible for delivering a series of really large projects that are different than what we deliver in the city. So we don't look at it as a loss. We look at it as professional development and career development.
All right. Today, the City Council will consider a contract with Alliance Engineering for the annexation-related land use and planning services. The council recently updated its annexation policy plan and expansion map. So are we now moving forward with an annexation action?
Yes. There are certain things required by state law that we need to do before an annexation. Right now, we're only considering annexation on the two pieces of property that the city owns in Summit County, which is a Clark Ranch out on US 40, and then some properties to the north end of Round Valley. Those are city-owned properties. The state requires a series of analysis and surveys, which is like what we've always done. We need to have continuing conversations with Wasatch County before we move forward with the Bonanza Flat annexation, because it's in a different county, Wasatch County has to say, yep, this is a good idea. Go ahead and take some action.
Where are we on those conversations?
I think with the shift in personnel, the staff has been having those conversations, but the high-level elected official conversations have kind of slowed down.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to mention on the agenda?
No. I just wanted to bring up the 245 Woodside question that's coming up tomorrow evening. This is classic Park City and takes up probably 40% of our staff time. Where back in the 1970s or 1980s, a project was constructed that may have a building permit but may not have permits from the planning department because that's not the way we did things. And now in 2018, 2019, 2020, we're having to clean up those issues. The project started as a duplex. It was converted into a triplex. In 2010, the building department gave them an approval to move it back to a duplex. A duplex is a conditional use in the zone. That use permit has never been issued. So we're trying to clean that up. You're going to see two or three of these coming forward over the next 3 months where we're just cleaning up these land use questions. But the key thing from a policy perspective, Leslie, is that when you see these projects from the 1980s, they took up a substantial amount of city right-of-way to deliver parking. And so when we have these parking issues in Old Town or in the historic districts, a lot of them are the result of these things from the 1980s that we're trying to clean up now. And we don't necessarily have all those answers.
Okay. Bruce, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you, Leslie.
That's Park City Planning Director Bruce Erickson. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Good morning. Well, controversy swirling over a cease and desist letter sent to the Park City School District over a teacher development program about inclusivity. In the studio to tell us how the district moves forward from here, I have the Superintendent of Schools, Jill Godet, along with School Board President Andrew Kaplan. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
Hello.
So the letter was sent by attorney Trevor Caperson saying that he represents parents in the district who are troubled by the Welcoming Schools program that was implemented at Trailside. So before we talk about their issue, I mean, can somebody explain what Welcoming Schools is?
Sure. So the state of Utah, the State Board of Education, updated its rules and regulations in April 2017 and April 2018 to talk about bullying policies and anti-discrimination and anti-bias language, and requires our schools to develop, update, implement bullying, cyberbullying, hazing, retaliation, and abusive conduct policies at school and district level. So that training is really required, and this training is actually provided by the state.
And I guess some people or some parents are wondering, why is it the school's job to teach kindness and inclusivity? I mean, that's what parenting's about.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if everybody came with the same experiences, backgrounds, values? What this really does, though, is this helps our teachers when they see or hear something to be able to stop it in its tracks. So all this training really does is support the teacher in kind of practicing that if they hear somebody using any derogatory term to a child, to another child, what they can do to intervene appropriately, what question they can ask, how they can set things back to rights. So basically it takes what we learn at home and it makes it a safe place in school to learn about these things and to recognize kids are different for all kinds of reasons.
Right. And so it's not just for those students, perhaps, that have two mothers as parents. It's beyond that?
It is. It's really, bullying, anti-bias, anti-discrimination on anything. Even the little materials from the website show a child in a wheelchair. Shows a child with pigtails. Kids can tease for any kinds of reasons, but it does take adult training and adult intervention sometimes to have the kids reflect on that and find a new pathway to a friendship.
Yeah. So the training is only for teachers.
Correct.
No students were involved in this.
No, this is just for teachers.
Yeah. So what was the program only offered at Trailside?
Trailside decided to start this, yes, and that was just based on what they had noticed on their playground. And, you know, that can be anything from kids teasing one another for those kids in the French dual immersion to those kids not in the French dual immersion. The kids were calling each other Frenchies and biscuits. You know, so it can be things that sound innocuous, but if a child is feeling singled out for any reason, we're trying to create a safe space in our schools for all to feel included. And, you know, kids will thrive on sometimes that difference. So we're trying to build the commonalities rather than the differences.
Yeah, so is similar training happening then in the other schools?
Right. So there are different ways that we handle state regulations and state rules. And sometimes it's just that we start with one school, we see how much time this kind of training takes, and then we roll out. Other times we use a more static, more PowerPoint kind of based training just to get people started. But Trailside did query for some additional tips and tactics and strategies, and the state had this program. Holly Bell is a recognized trainer for the program who works at the state board and offered to come on up and provide that training for us.
Okay, cool. So again, this is a program that has been approved by the state of Utah?
Correct.
Yeah. And the school district is free to make its own selection?
Correct. Yeah. Correct.
Do we know who's behind this effort? And how many? I mean, is it really? It makes it sound like there are many families that are concerned about this, and of course, that's of some concern to you.
Right. So, Principal Sinan heard from four parents and answered questions for four parents, but those are the only people that we officially know. You know, had some questions about this particular rollout.
Okay, and they are parents of kids in the school.
These four people are, yes.
All right. Because we had heard that maybe some national movement perhaps getting involved in this, and not even locals that are participating in the cease and desist letter. But we do know that there are local parents that are very concerned about the training.
Right.
Okay. So Andrew, maybe you could jump in this, and how is it that the district is responding to this cease and desist order? I mean, there was some talk about a lawsuit, but my understanding is that one has not, in fact, been filed.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really comment on the legal nature of the letter and what has been threatened against us. But what I'll say is that, I think we've been encouraged by the feedback that we've gotten from the vast majority of parents at Trailside and in our district. Your previous question, how many people are involved? Well, it's very difficult for us to know because, you know, most of the communication has been anonymous, which is, slightly unique in Park City. Typically, people aren't afraid to speak out and come to the school board of the district and voice their opinions. In this case, they've chosen to remain anonymous. And so, we don't really know who's behind it or how many there are. I think we, as Dr. Gilday said, we know that there's, a handful, but there's many more folks who have come out and said, you know what, we support Principal Sinan, we support the district, we want the district to remain inclusive and to try to make all children feel welcome. And so we're encouraged by that feedback and, we're supportive of Principal Sinan and the efforts at Trailside.
Another concern I've heard being raised is apparently parents were emailed or sent emails about this concern, and there's some concern about how all of these emails were received. How did these folks get the parent emails? And I mean, there's some concern that maybe someone abused their authority and.
Well, that's correct. So when we put out our PTO directories, which include parent information for all families who are members of the PTO, that does give every parent the right or the access to that list, but it doesn't give them the right to create a listserv or to create other broad-based spam-type messages. This particular anonymous email that has come through does not have an unsubscribe. You know, it doesn't have a way for you to know who's contacting you. And so I do believe parents are unsettled by receiving these messages.
Yeah, nothing you can do about that, though, because
no,
it's public.
No, the PTO directory is something that when you opt in, of course, you don't have to add your email address, but many parents do because, of course, this is how parents set up play dates and all kinds of other great aspects of the community. So you hate to think that is being misused.
So if bullying is still a problem that we have in our schools, are we doing a bad job of disciplining the bullies?
So I think what happens, you know, there's kind of a misconception about this program, right? It's just one piece of a comprehensive approach to anti-bullying or inclusive behaviors. And of course, as a district, we care about inclusive practice across the board. So I think there was just a fundamental misinformation or miscommunication about this particular program because the parents have twisted it into being about sex ed, where it really is not at all about sex education for adults or for kids. So there is a misunderstanding about that for sure that I think we should try to clear up. And I think if people recognized it was not about sex ed, that it is simply about anti-bias, anti-bullying language, maybe people would feel more reassured.
So how do we move forward from here?
Right. So how do we move forward from here is I do believe we have legal counsel involved. Of course, we are always open as a school district to talk to any of our families about any topic. I've not been communicated with by anybody about this particular topic. I've not heard anything directly about these concerns. So I wish people would have given us the chance to solve that at a more local level.
Yeah. Also, hey, I wanted to talk about Master Plan, but we're running out of time. But Dr. Gilday, somebody had sent us photos of some construction work being done at your house and left a phone message saying that, in his words, the construction was totally unnecessary. It looks like you're having the driveway replaced. Can you tell us what's going on?
Right. So any of the work that we're doing at the house was noted in our inspection plan, of course, when we reviewed and purchased this particular property. So we had some eroding mountain in the back of the house, and we had just gravel in the front supporting the driveway rather than a retaining wall. So we actually are working with that to make sure that the house is safe and secure for anybody who would live there.
Okay, so is that the district then is paying for the repairs?
Yes, we have some shared ownership and shared interest in making sure that it's the best environment for anybody who would live there.
Okay. And then are we also adding heating elements to it?
We are adding that because of the steep nature of the driveway to be able to get some of that. It was really building up at the end of last winter. So I had ice from about November through about May. So it will be nice to maybe get ahead of some of that. But of course, I pay all the utilities on that. So that would be something that if there is an increased cost, that of course is my family that handles that.
Okay. But the district pays for the improvements and the repairs to the...
Yeah, I mean, it's our building. And, you know, we repair and maintain all of our facilities, including that one. And make sure that it's, you know, kept up to date so that it retains its value.
Yeah. And then finally, Andrew, in terms of the master planning at this point, we saw the list of the five community priorities. They still seem so unspecific at this point. So when are we going to start seeing some specific recommendations?
Yeah, that's a great question, Leslie. I think we're narrowing those down slowly but surely. And I think by the end of this calendar year, so in the next month or two, we'll have some more concrete things for the community. You know, what we've tried to do this whole process is keep everyone up to date, real time with the process that we're going through, as well as the ways that we're going to be making our decision. And the last round of questions for the community were more about, okay, these are the decisions that the school board has to make. These are the variables that we're going to weigh in our decision, you know, whether that's prioritizing cost over function, whether it's prioritizing flexibility down the road, you know, timing of getting the ninth grade into the high school. All of these things are relevant for us in terms of how we make our decision. And what we want to find out from the community is, what are the community priorities? Is cost number one, or is cost number five or 10? And that's going to impact how we vote as a school board. And so what we're trying to do is run this process as transparently as possible. And so that when we get to our decision, there's nothing in the decision that's a surprise to anyone, right? Everyone knows what we looked at, how we made our decision, you know, what the costs are going to be, how we value the cost versus the, you know, the benefit. And so that's where we are. And, you know, again, our plan has been by the end of this calendar year to have some concrete ideas for the community. And that's where we are.
Okay. I need to leave it there. Jill, Andrew,
thank
thanks
you
for your time. This is KPCW Park City.